Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about legacy sequels and also what we thought about Nobody 2, Red Sonja, Freakier Friday, and that horror movie taking over the world called Weapons. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm a fellow host, Troy Heinrichs.
Woo-woo! What's up?
And I'm back. Amanda Steinberg? Amanda Sink? What's your name?
Oh, you forgot.
Yeah, it's been
Hello! Woo!
By the way, can I
tell
you...
She has internet!
Can I tell you something in private?
Yeah.
That's public? Somebody told me that they think hello was inappropriate on Inspired by a True Story. It's a true crime podcast. It's too upbeat. You got to bring it down.
Oh, okay.
No, you don't. You don't have to do that.
Hello.
That's what you should do. So where have you been? People, if you've never heard Amanda before, she's been a podcast host on this intermittently for a few years.
Intermittently? You're so funny. So I'm accurate. In Texas now, and I'm set up. I have a new job that I freaking love. I'm set up there. Big life changes that came in addition to all of this. And then now I have like hardwired internet to my Microsoft Surface so I can record.
Okay. So before you were just winging it with Wi-Fi like the rest of the world and couldn't figure out how to make it work.
It is honestly hilarious how bad the Wi-Fi is. It's shocking. And if I'm in the house, I also don't get cell service. So it's not like I can just throw on my hotspot or like anything or use my phone. It just, you don't exist.
But that makes sense to me though, because Texas has like, you know, concrete houses because of the heat, right? So like getting a cell signal through that makes sense that would not. Wi-Fi in the house going from a already hardwired device, that perplexes me.
It sounds, this is a technical term, sounds like bullshit, but I'll take it. You know, it's fine. We'll go with it. We'll write it out. We'll
say, yeah, it must be true. And videos.
Buffering. Got it. Buffering. That's a thing still.
Well, I hope that it says you hardwired your stuff just for this, that you also hardwired other stuff, because then your Netflix experience is going to be amazing.
Yeah, so my TV in my bedroom is now hardwired to the internet as well, so I don't have to have, you know, buffering there.
It just starts Wednesday on Wednesday, but it doesn't finish till Saturday, or what?
By the time Saturday hits, I'm still waiting for it to load.
That's messed up.
It was honestly disrespectful how bad this Wi-Fi was. The Wi-Fi still sucks. Don't get me wrong. Nothing that AT&T has done has improved anything at all. And then there's no other
provider.
Good luck
getting them as an ad partner now. Thanks a lot for that.
If they want to fix the internet, I'll support them however they want. But yeah, one company, one choice. They can do whatever they want.
Well, good to have you back.
Thanks.
John is still on sabbatical. He's gone for a few weeks still. We'll get into some stuff in a little bit. Have you been watching anything? I know you saw Freakier Friday. We're going to talk about that later, but have you been watching other, like catching up on the old Netflix now that you have streaming?
So what I've done since Malcolm Jamal Warner passed, because it literally crushed my heart and soul, is I've actually been doing a rewatch of The Resident.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Cosby Show, and this is going to be a very uncomfortable discussion.
No.
I'm like, so what do you do? Like, you hate 60% of the episode until Jamal Warner shows up, or what?
No. That was, honestly, he was so good in The Resident. Mm-hmm. He played such a different type of character than, you know, what I think we're used to him playing. We're used to him using his charm and being cutesy, right? And swooning us. But instead,
it's a little far for me, but, you know, go ahead. Handsome fella. I don't know about swooning me.
Older him, you know?
Older him is handsome too, no offense.
I mean, yeah. I'm not saying he's not handsome, just, you know, I'm mostly straight.
Mostly. Yeah. So I've been watching that. That has been really fun to kind of catch up with. I love the show anyway, but it was just nice to, I guess, revisit some of his work. The Hunting Wives.
Was that six seasons?
I don't know how many. I know there's several, but I have a deadline on Netflix.
I feel like I canceled off of that show. I watched one season after Emily Van Camp's exit.
Yep, six seasons. Mm.
So I think I might be one season short of actually finishing it.
Well, it's on Netflix, but until September 1st. So if you watch it before the end of... So that's where I'm on a mission.
And you were watching what? The Hunting Wives?
Which we'll talk about later because that's on my list.
Yeah, that's been interesting.
It must be goodness. Because all I know about that show is my buddy Tyler texted me and said he was watching this. And I'm like, oh yeah, how was it? And he said, naughty. And that's it. That was the review.
That's all you really need to know. Kinda. I feel like that's about it.
Yeah.
I spent time writing up my review.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, let's get moving then. How about that? So one thing I want to talk about before we get to our big topic this week, which is legacy sequels. And I think it's an interesting topic because we got a lot of them popping up. But hey, yo, The Recruit and To All the Boys I've Loved Before star Noah Centineo, was that right? About right? It's close enough. He's been cast as the new John Rambo in an origin-style prequel from CISO director Jelmari Highlander. So it's Heller, but I really just want to say Highlander so bad because there can only be one. But Sylvester Stallone's not involved in this at all. And I'm just kind of curious. Everybody knows how I feel. I love Stallone.
Hey, you, I can do Stallone all day if you guys want to. You know what I mean? But
I don't know how I feel about this, doing a prequel without Stallone while he's still alive. And he just did a couple Rambo movies recently. I don't know if I want this. So you guys, what do you think?
I feel your argument is like, it's like doing Predator movies without having Arnold Schwarzenegger involved. Like,
No. I would say it would be like doing Die Hard movies without John McClane, without Bruce Willis.
Well, we're going to have to do that going forward. So,
well, yeah, I get what you're saying, but I'm just saying it feels too soon.
Jeez, how's that? It's too soon? Was dark. What are we doing?
Well, he can't do it anymore. So I'm just saying, like, doing a prequel, because they were talking about doing that, but then he was also going to kind of bookend it. So then he would be a little bit of a narrator like John McClane here and there. Stallone's not involved in this whatsoever. So I don't know how I feel about that. So you guys, what do you think? It's going to be based on the actual character going to Vietnam as a young man before First Blood happens.
I mean, my challenge with this is, of course, have we distanced ourselves so far from Vietnam that the younger demographic that would come out to see movies of this type aren't even going to really know what Vietnam's about. So they're not going to understand the concept of the story and how it ties back into the original movies. So I think the marketing team has a bit of a challenge on this one because they're probably trying to pitch it towards, the 45 plus crowd, because the under 45s, I don't know how much they're going to come in droves for this one, to be honest. I do like the idea of going back to the beginning, because then you could ride this character if it turns out well and do multiple Rambo movies going forward. Like, that play is kind of interesting. So it really depends on if it's in universe, same story, or is this a whole another arc branch, like, female Ghostbusters going off in a different direction kind of thing.
At this point, I feel like I've just fully accepted that every single piece of content or IP is going to be redone, remade, likely isn't going to have the involvement of the people that we want to have its involvement. I mean, even, I gotta talk about it since I'm here, even Buffy. I'm like, this is crazy that we're involving them and bringing her back into the fold for this. She looks amazing. She also has the same like agile acrobatics. Like, she's still in that phase for her. Anyway, so good for her. She's not old.
Sarah Michelle Gellar, go for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But I think it's just one of those things where we have just gotten so used to that being a thing that I don't even think it phases me or bothers me anymore. Like, the one hand of me does understand, okay, like, keeping tradition, right? Let's have him involved. It's important for him to be involved, etc. The other hand is like, well, if we're trying to do something different, and reinvent that? Do we need him fully involved in it? And I think it just depends on what type of art they're trying to put out.
What I would like to do, the Sisu director, it's a great movie. It really is a great action flick. And the First Blood novel that the First Blood movie is based on, it's a lot more of a crime thriller, less of an all-out, hey, yo, let's take out a whole army here. You know, it's not like that. So I don't know which way they're going with it. Are you going with more of a hard edge guy who's learning to take control of his life and become a warrior, but also kind of losing his mental faculties, because that's who John Rambo is in the book. He's kind of fractured from Vietnam. You know, it really depends on how they go through. If you're just doing like a straightforward action flick, but it takes place in Vietnam, I don't know if I want that. But if they're going to do something a little different and try to really shine a light on Vietnam, I'd check it out. I just wish they had Stallone's blessing. I mean, he's played the character for so long. It's synonymous. It's iconic. I mean, whenever someone's badass, they're either called John Wick or Rambo. Like, that's just the two names that come up. So it would have been nice to have his blessing. But money gonna money.
I mean, really, Carl Weathers had no say in Creed, and Creed turned out to be a massive hit.
That's true. That's true. But his character was also dead. And, right. You know, and also Stallone did create that whole world. So those are his babies. He really, you know, defines that. And I get he didn't own First Blood because David Morrell wrote the book. So it's really his. But Stallone made it his. But I see your point. Carl Weathers was Creed. I'm sure they got his blessing, though. I mean, they were friends, so.
I don't know.
But speaking of all that nostalgia, let's just use that as a transition. But first, I want to mention Patreon. So our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. And Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. So once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. We're actually going to be working on a bad movie night for a movie called War of the World, which starred Ice Cube that was on Amazon Prime. I don't know. It's...
You just got to listen to the Bad Movie Night episode.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
A lot.
But that's coming soon. And now that you understand what that is, you can support the show. It's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Legacy sequels is what we're going to talk about. And that's because we keep getting them. Happy Gilmore 2 just came out on Netflix. Huge hit. Freakier Friday just came out. Huge hit. You know, what this means is sequels to movies that are 20 or more years old, maybe even 10 years old. You could probably make that as a debate. And what these are movies, think about it, like Ghostbusters Afterlife, Top Gun Maverick, Creed, like Troy just talked about, Dr. Sleep, Coming to America, Bill and Ted Face the Music, like those kinds of movies where they haven't had a sequel in a very, very, very long time. Or they've never had one. They've never had one. Like Freaky Friday didn't have a sequel, even though it's technically a remake. So is this the third movie then? I don't know. But yeah, The Color of Money. That's a good example. That came many, many years after The Hustler, from many years before that. And that was a legacy sequel. But it's really starting to take off again. I mean, nostalgia is a big win at the box office and on streaming. And it can go a little too much. And it can get a little excessive, get a little exhausting, because sometimes you just want to let your, like Amanda was talking about, sometimes you just want to let things go, but Hollywood won't stop messing with everything. So I guess before we get into the actual topic, what do you guys think about the idea of digging something up just because it has IP relevance?
I also like to have money.
That's what you think about it? To have mm-hmm. money?
Yeah. I understand. I also like to have money. So I understand where they're coming from. Now, me
a good
as
sales
a
pitch. I also like to have money. It's a very popular mm-hmm. concept. Yeah.
But the other side of it is, it's hard to say that people don't want to watch that content. The reason they keep doing this is because people are going to see it. They're either going to see it, they're paying to see it, they're watching it in spades on Netflix. I mean, Happy Gilmore 2. Look at that. That was huge for an opening weekend on a streaming platform. So people want that.
Oh, people definitely want it. People definitely want it. Even if you didn't like it, I know... Most of the people I know watch Happy Gilmore 2. Whether they liked it or didn't like it, they still finished it, or at least gave it a shot. So
yeah, people that I know that didn't even really care about Happy Gilmore 1 are still watched Happy Gilmore 2.
I've watched parts of it over and over again. The Eminem cameo, over and over again. Over and over again. Jackass.
I think for me, it's smart on the studio's part where we're at right now in the concept of how the studios make money, right? We've sunk a lot of money into streaming services.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
so
yeah.
Now that I have the streaming service, how do I get people to sign up? How do I get people to stay and be sticky? And so when you have people in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s, the Gen Xers that have kids that now have disposable income that are 16 to 25, you know, this is the ripe time for people to say like, hey, we're going to put out a new Ghostbusters movie. We're going to put out a new Karate Kid movie. We're going to put out a new Gremlins movie coming soon.
I forgot about the Karate Kid movie. That just came out and I already forgot about it.
Yeah. And it was good. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
It was.
Mostly because Pacey was there. Pacey wasn't in it. It might not have been as good. But Josh Jackson did a great job.
You see he and Katie Holmes are doing a movie together right now?
They're doing like a three-part movie. It's like a three-movie trilogy.
Yeah. Good for her. She's like really had a resurgence lately. But, sorry. Good. I didn't mean to try.
Yeah, but I think what this is doing is it's saying like, I want to go see that in a theater. But what it's also doing is it's saying like, I want to take my kids to go see it in a theater. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I'm now going, you guys need to go see Daniel LaRusso kick ass back in 1984 and watch this Karate Kid movie, you know, all three of them on HBO Max or wherever it landed, right? Maybe it landed over at Netflix because of Cobra Kai at the time. So it's like you're getting people to sign up for the streaming services to go back to the nostalgia factor to show the old ones and then go to the movie theater to spend the big ticket money to see the new one. So from a business perspective, I think this is genius, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I could go all day about just leave them alone, da da da. And I know you still have whatever you grew up with, but I'm a sucker for them too. I'm absolutely a sucker. When Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out, I was like a 10-year-old kid
in a candy store.
Yes, yep. It felt like I was a little kid all over again. The Force Awakens, same thing. I felt like I was a kid all over again. I just felt like a little kid. Jurassic mm-hmm. World, I felt like a young man all over again. Like, you know, it gives you that young feeling because it reminds you of things that made you happy when you could move around a little bit more. When you didn't
and
go,
and this is how they get money.
Yeah, and they get money. And sometimes they just keep redoing it and they don't even care. Was it Halloween has had legacy sequels a couple times with Jamie Lee Curtis, and she they just ignore that the other ones happened. They could just do that because they make money. And people they've all been hits.
The Halloween timeline is as complicated as The Legend of Zelda at this point.
It's more complicated. I mean, was it 98 was when they did the H2O one? And then, what was it, in 2018, they did another Halloween, and they just pretended like the H2O one didn't happen. I'm like, it had to happen, like, because that's how we got Josh Hartnett. Really,
yeah, we know you guys weren't crazy about some of these movies, so like, just ignore them, okay?
It was still a hit. Both of them were actually, both series were a hit. And they're just like, no, we can do that. And that's the crazy thing about Hollywood. They could just keep doing that. They could actually do another Jurassic World or Jurassic Park and just pretend like all the other movies after Jurassic Park didn't happen. And we, the audience, would just be like, okay. We'd be like, what's that character that Pete Davidson does? Chad? Okay. We'll just be that guy. Okay.
Yeah, because the movie goes, okay, Jurassic is coming. Boom, here's my $20 pre-sale ticket. I go to the movie. Oh, man, that sucked. I wish I wouldn't have done that remake. Why did they do that? Still got your $20. They don't care.
But there are exceptions, because I don't think you could do that with Star Wars. I really think that fan base, your fan base, Troy, that's really like your brethren. I don't think they would allow that.
For to call it a council, but that's okay.
If your council, you popped out a new trilogy and just pretended like the original trilogy and all nine of those movies didn't exist, none of that would fly.
There's a universe, there's a world.
Yeah.
There's.
So what are the rules?
You can put something like in a completely different era, though.
You could, but why can you do that in some franchises, but you can't do it in stuff like Star Wars? Like, why is that so don't touch the mythology? Can you get, it kind of brings up an interesting point. I'm curious.
I mean, you have to still work it in because it's just like Rings of Power right now on Amazon trying to fit it into the Tolkien trilogy. Like Tolkien said, go ahead and do the TV show, but you can't touch anything in the Third Age. And whatever you talk about in the Second Age has to make sure it flows into the Third Age because you can't touch the Third Age. But they got more creative freedom in the Second Age.
I don't know what any of that. Amanda, do you know what any of that means? I don't know what any of that means.
I don't know what he's talking about. I stopped listening. I'm just kidding.
Welcome back. Love you too.
I was going to say, I'm not used to having to talk to people and pay attention. I love you too. I missed you guys. I really did.
But it is interesting to me that we can, some things it's okay to change the timeline and some things it's not okay. It's not okay. I didn't see Bill and Ted Face the Music. Did that respect like the previous movies, or was it kind of its own thing?
No, it was totally respectful. Okay. And it's I mean, it's not like great movie. I mean, not that the first one was great, but it was fun watch. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was very respectful to the rest of the timeline. And when you get to the end, I thought it really played it off really well and how it all came together.
Okay. Would you guys watch like a Goonies 2? Everybody's talking about that. Would you be excited about a Goonies 2, or would you just be sad because they haven't all aged well?
Well, I mean, it depends, right? If they're the main characters, like trying to go like on an adult treasure hunt,
too much, right?
No.
Yeah.
Like if it's their kids going on an adventure and they're the parents, like I'm down for that.
Maybe just imagine Brolin everybody like breaks different hips or limbs or something on the journey. It just turns into like a grandparents club.
That's funny.
We go. You mix Goonies with Cocoon. They're all in the hospital or something because of all their adventures they've been on, and they break out of the hospital to go on one last adventure.
Okay, that's just ridiculous. All right, so what is necessary to get the concept perfect for you? Like what, when you know something you love is coming back and they're going to make a sequel to it, and you're hesitant, right? You're on the fence. You don't know. I don't know if I really want to mess with this. What do you feel like has to be there?
Whatever was in the original.
You want like just basically a carbon copy of whatever.
Not the first a carbon one? Copy, but there's enough of the original in there to go like, this is familiar. It's comfortable. I understand it. I don't have to think too much. I can just go back and feel like I felt back in the 80s. Like I felt that with the Ghostbusters Afterlife. I felt like the presence was there. Gozer was there. Like there's things that were hit on and go like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's cool.
But don't you think that one was lacking comedy?
I don't think it was lacking comedy per se.
I didn't think it was very funny.
Didn't have to be funny. It was different. It was the
first
afterlife.
One was funny.
Afterlife is not funny, Aaron.
True. I don't know. I'm not there yet, but I'll let you know when I get there. But the first two movies are meant to be comedies, you know?
And yeah, but the second one wasn't funny either.
Well, that's a whole different reason.
But yeah, like you think like the Top Gun Maverick, like it felt like the first movie with a couple additions.
It really did. Yeah. It really
you
did.
Know, Force Awakens was exactly like A New Hope with a couple additions.
Literally like, same story.
Same story, same concept. Yep. Fly around and blow up the big machine.
Except we got to see Darth Vader going through it because that's what we needed. Kylo Ren, just got to see him go through it so we know how he gets there.
But yeah, those movies are fun and they make a crap ton of money. Because they did what they're supposed to do. Keep it simple, stupid.
I don't feel like you always have to have the pieces of what the original had. Like it doesn't have to be, this is critical to having in this movie the next time, right? Like even if we're talking about, for example, Rambo, right?
Okay.
We traditionally have known that character to be, and this one might be a little bit different because it's based on a book character, but we may have this idea from back in that machismo era that Rambo is just this very masculine character that kind of bottles things up, that fuels his emotions into the action that he takes effect on, right? Mm-hmm. But masculinity is so different today. So even that, like a lot of people I think would see Rambo as that is the key component to that character, right? Like he's kind of closed off emotionally. He is somebody who's just all about the action and taking care of things. And masculinity today is a little bit different because we've shifted. We've shifted into more of an acceptance of men having emotions. And so that changes the way that the character would be. Granted, it's still like in a Vietnam era, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to have
a big old baby. Yeah.
You don't have to have it be a carbon copy like you were saying earlier. There's a way to introduce a different storyline or a different character type or something in it and still connect it to the original story to give it the feeling of something new. Though there are some movies that I feel like it really should just be, this is the concept, try to like cookie cutter it and it'll be fun.
Yeah,
right? Ones that don't have as much
need. I see where both of you are coming from. And I think most of them kind of fall in line with what Troy's saying because of the money, right? They want the money. And then there's every once in a while you get one that takes a chance. And I would say Cobra Kai counts, right? It's a sequel series. It's not really a movie, but they took the same characters throughout the thing. But they made something completely different. It's not like the movies at all. I mean, karate, but otherwise it's kind of a cheesy comedy. And I think that was kind of a masterstroke because you reinvented it for a whole new generation. You kind of kept the 80s flavor, but you also made it modern. And you allowed these characters to grow. You know, Johnny, you know, he has that machismo like you're talking about. Like, he grew up in the 80s. He's Rambo from that era, or in his head he is. And he grows into being like an actual man of modern times as the show goes on. So I can see both takes on that. And I think they're both important. When I watched Axel F, I was a big fan of that one, right? Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F on Netflix. Yeah. Because it saved that franchise for me. Because Beverly Hills Cop 3 had ruined it. I love the first two movies, and I absolutely just can't have disdain for the third one. This one brought back Axel Foley, as I love the character, made him funny again, but also acknowledged he's not quick to action anymore because he's not as young as he used to be. Everything kind of hurts. You know, he's not as quick as he used to be, but he still has the same, he makes the same bad choices and da-da-da-da, but he's also kind of grown as a character. So, and he's also a great cop. They like brought it all together. They made something that, hey, he's older, he's different, but he's also the same. So you have a lot of that nostalgia wrapped in there with newness and modernization and making it feel like, okay, I'm still getting something fresh. I'm not getting just a carbon copy of what I watched before.
Yeah.
So what are the mistakes in this concept that you think you see too often?
Or it's the same jokes.
Coming
to America, sadly, was not good, in my opinion.
It was not sexual chocolate. It was not.
Nope. It sure was not.
Nope. Had the opposite effect.
You can't bottle the same thing. So like Amanda was saying, like you have to do something a little bit different. Happy Gilmore 2, I really thought was great. Like, let me recap what happened. Here's where I'm at. I'm a drunk trying to get my daughter's college education saved up. The story was great until the end with the stupid Max Force.
It was definitely forced, is what it was.
Yeah. Like, the story was a great idea.
I laughed out loud a lot. I laughed out loud a lot.
But that last 20 minutes was definitely hard to finish.
I agree with that. Should have been 20 minutes shorter, to your point, as always in every episode.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of, like, don't try to do exactly the same. Just have the right nods at the right time, and you're good to go. Like, there was a lot of right nods at the right time in Maverick, but there was also enough new that made it extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of other than the Force jokes, because I mean, I feel like Troy, that is one of the biggest things that drives me crazy is when it feels like you're literally, as a screenwriter, just copying and pasting from the last one. And this seems like this went really well. Let's do that again.
Like, if they did Lethal Weapon 6, they'd do I'm Too Old for This Shit so many times. They'd try some play on it and it'd be done to death.
Just to force it and try to, we're going to try to tap into nostalgia. There's a more passive, subtle way to do it. And I feel like that is one of the important keys that can easily be missed. And it's also about understanding your fan base for that content too, right? Like, some fan bases, depending on the series or the original IP, they want to have it respected and honored and to have all of these elements of appreciation that don't affect the way that they remember the original, right? And then others are like, it's not that serious. It's not that deep. We just want something fun. Like, even for me, I saw Freakier Friday. I really liked it. I saw the original Freaky Friday. I loved that. And for me, it was going into it, I didn't even really care to know, like, what our true story was. Like, I don't need a trailer for something like that because I already know.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, what it was, and can accept, you know, something fun and comedic to come out of it, that whether it's the exact same thing or it's something a little different or it's very different, like I know I'm going to have a good time because of who's a part of it. So I think it is also really important for the filmmakers to really, really understand who is the fan base that exists here, who is going to be taking part of it in today's age, not just those nostalgia freaks, and how do I find like a good blend that honors the original content?
All right.
So I think, I think with the jokes, I think Happy Gilmore 2 was a really great example of that, because they did pull in the jokes that you expect them to pull in, but they expanded upon them, which is the key. Right. So like when he goes to his happy place, you know, and he's trying not to drink, he's got to take the beer pitchers from Julie Bowen and dump them out, you know? So it's like, and then he has to like find a new happy place in order to go to because of that. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's cool. Cause like, here's the throwback and here's the new twist that we're going to put on this. And that makes it fun to watch.
And then sometimes they go too far by having that maxi contest or whatever it was. I don't even, you just put like edgy golf. Having that whole contest was a little too much for a lot of people. Like, it was just,
that wasn't a throwback to the original.
No, but like, no, but that was but like having, we're going to take it to a modern era. We're going to do something different. We're going to make it unique. And it's too far. It goes a little too far.
Yeah.
Even if I understood why they were doing it. So give me the best and worst example of this concept. Like, do you have a best and worst example of a legacy sequel in your mind? And I, you know, it can go either way. It can be something that's a sequel to something that already had sequels, or something that's just a brand new kind of movie, brand new sequel. Like, here, I'll tell you, I'll give you my examples would be Mad Max Fury Road, I think is a excellent example of what a legacy sequel should be. You even had, I mean, it's the same world, has a different character, a different actor playing the character, but it's a sequel because it's still in that same world. Force Awakens, I've talked about it, but you just completely reinvented that. Jurassic World, I think they reinvented it. They both do the same thing. They keep the movies fun and make them interesting and bring along nostalgia as long as create new fans, because they do what made the originals awesome, but also add a little flavor to it, add something new to it. Like, Force Awakens brought back legacy characters while also, you know, kind of killing some off, but also brought them back. So you see that nostalgia, introduce new characters. So you have somebody for the younger audience or the newer audience to mesh with. And same thing with Jurassic World. You know, you've got dinosaurs. Okay. They were from the first three movies, and actually that franchise, they kind of died out. So they made sure to tie it in with as little connection to the original characters. But specifically, they just wanted, okay, we're going to have dinosaurs because that's the draw. Only we're going to make this big. We're going to show you the world that they always talked about in those movies, but now it's here. And that's kind of what they did with that one. I just think those are really good examples of how you do legacy sequels well.
On the opposite side of that.
That works.
One that really made me really sad because the first one was so good and the sequel was so bad, I would say one of the worst sequels that's existed,
okay,
is The Mask and Son of the Mask. So yeah. The Mask, I love The Mask. I love Jim Carrey. I had so much fun with that movie. It was, yeah, it was a little crazy and weird and, like, you know, just a very unique story, I guess, and Jim Carrey knows how to throw it out of the park. But Jim Carrey is what made that special.
Mm-hmm.
It was never, at least in my opinion, it was never about what the movie was about. It was about how Jim Carrey portrays that. And they did not, that's one of those things where it's like, okay, we don't care about the storyline. We're not here for the storyline. We're here for the comedy and the entertainment and the fun. And if you can't get Jim Carrey or someone like Jim Carrey to participate in this, we are not interested. And it was just so poorly done.
So would you say, somebody should have stopped him? Something like that?
Ah! Like,
it happened.
I know.
It just happened.
I'm proud of myself.
Oh, you thought of that as soon as I said The Mask too, didn't you?
Waiting for you to shut up so I could nail that in. Yep. What about Scream? Because that franchise was a legacy sequel, and that came back like 20-some years after the third one.
See, but I've liked them.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's a good example for you.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, because even though there's a little bit of a different feel to them as they get a little bit more modern, right? Like they're mm-hmm. trying to kind of tap into that a bit more. The core of Scream still exists in each of those movies. And so that's where it's like really critical to understand what drew people to this, to feeling like it was something special. And with Scream in particular, at least from my perspective, a lot of it was, it's the fun, stabby thriller horror movie, right? Like, we want the comedy. We want you to make efforts to kind of break the fourth wall for us in the capacity of, yeah, we're going to tell you how stupid, like how quickly you're going to die if you're going to be stupid, if you're going to go investigate, if you're going to have sex, like all of these rules, right, that they cover in the films. And they tap onto that, but they also evolve the story, the characters, the area that this is in. And it's not just like, oh, this one, there's only one serial killer that could ever exist. Well, technically two. There's only two serial killers that could ever exist. No, we continue to move along that, and they find a way to connect it back to that. And that's what makes it really fun. Like, Scream has done such a great job, especially with being so different in terms of some of the movies and where the story goes.
So Trey, what, you got a good and bad example?
Yeah, I mean, for good, most recently, like we were talking about Maverick and Force Awakens, but Twisters, thought Twisters was a really great job, making me really interested in Tornadoes again. I thought they did a great job with the story and the whole concept of the land grab from that perspective, like have the insurance company come in after the town gets destroyed and then they buy up the land real cheap. Like, that's a really great, like, practical thing that would happen in society today. So to put that in a movie... and then, you know, obviously have this love story, but it doesn't become a love story until maybe at the end. We don't really know what happens between the two of them.
And it's like a spinoff of Superman and nobody knew.
Exactly. So I think Twisters did a really great job, along with, like we said, Maverick and Force Awakens. But the worst, and I can't believe nobody has talked about this, and it's probably because it is the worst.
I have a worse one than you. I know which one you're going to talk about, but I have a worse one. But you go ahead.
Because when I walked into the theater, the first thing I said was, "Hello, boys. F you." Independence Day Resurgence is the worst piece of hot pile trash you have ever seen in your life, to disrespect the glory that is the original Independence Day.
Okay, let's pump the brakes.
I was going to say, let's back this up a little bit.
It's a great movie. It's fun.
He said, this is an Oscar winning film.
Calm down. This is not Lawrence of Arabia, my friend.
All you got to say is, welcome to Earth.
It is a terrible sequel.
I want to hear you say that again.
Terrible sequel. Terrible sequel. But I would.
Did you know that in the original Independence Day, he was supposed to be flying the crop duster originally?
Who was? Will Smith?
When Randy Quaid's character comes on screen to fly the plane up the alien's butthole,
mm-hmm.
he was supposed to be in the crop duster when he comes back instead of in an Air Force jet.
So why'd that change?
I don't know. I didn't get the backstory. I just knew that originally it was supposed to be the crop duster.
They did it right.
That would have been awesome.
I think this movie was done right. How would the crop duster get in there with all this other military craft? Come on. That's just silly. Now you're losing me. You're losing me, Goose. I will say I've got a worse legacy sequel, and that's Blues Brothers 2000.
Oh, that's a good pick.
There you go.
It's a pretty terrible movie to one of my favorites. Blues Brothers is a fantastic movie. Great soundtrack. The irony, well, there's two things. One, I love Dan Aykroyd, but to think that you can make a sequel to one of your most popular movies that was famous because of you and your co-star, who was John Belushi, who famously died, and you think you can just replace him with John Goodman, you're out of your mind. You really are. And two, an ironic thing is, I love the soundtrack for Blues Brothers 2000, but the movie is terrible. And it's just irony, because the music is actually really good, but the movie is just so bad. And a lot of it is, I think, you can't watch that movie without wishing John Belushi was there.
Right.
Because he's half of what made the magic work. So,
I mean, they could have done like Blues Brothers 2020, and they could have just...
Let's do it again? No, let's not. Nope. Might have been better if he would have had John Belushi there. At least then there's a connection that I think works better, because they do... Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi have actually done Blues Brothers traveling and stuff as musicians. I think that would have worked better as a movie. I don't know. I can't remember why that didn't happen, but it was just a bad... Bad choice for a legacy sequel. Bad, bad, bad. And Dan Aykroyd knows the thing about bad sequels. I mean, Caddyshack 2 and yeah. So
it was a scheduling conflict.
Scheduling conflict.
Yeah, sure. ABC. He was on a show at that time. Total.
Should have waited.
Total Security, I think it was called.
Should have waited. Absolutely, yeah. Should have waited. And I'm with you on Coming to America. I think that one I was very disappointed in because I think, you know, I feel like Eddie Murphy truly loves that. I think he loves his legacy a lot. And he seems to really not want to go back to it unless it's something that's going to actually make him feel good again. And he seemed to be having a good time when you watch the movie. Like, he and Arsenio Hall genuinely seemed like they were having a good time. It just a terrible story. Just bad.
I mean, in isolation, I thought it was okay. Like, it's watchable. But when you think about it to the original and how funny the original was, like, it was a swing and a miss.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, 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 very forgettable. Okay, so yes, our listeners, like, name a couple that you think are good or bad, or give us some good examples. And there wasn't a whole one. Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai, do an Against the World Crime League, do a legacy sequel there, stuff that they'd want to see. Ruthie Rink said she wanted more True Lies, but I think that ship has sailed. Or a sequel to The Island. That'd be interesting. Remember that? The Michael Bay movie? Scarlett Johansson?
See, if Eliza Dushku was still acting, like a True Lies where she like carries the mantle or something, oh, you know, that would yeah. be that would be amazing because Eliza Dushku can kick ass.
Okay. Okay. Michael Bonovich, he's got a good idea. I think you'll be on board. Short Circuit. What would the world look like today if we're learning in the late 80s robots could be alive like Johnny Five? Do people finally accept it, or are they worried this is just the beginning of some Terminator-level apocalypse? That could be the twist. We created an AI that wants to go all Skynet, but Johnny convinces the AI that humans are worth saving.
Yeah.
I'm interested.
Yeah, AI is taking over, and who's the one person that can teach AI what love is, but the first robot that ever became with feelings?
Are we really worth saving, though?
Humans? Fuck no.
At this point, I'm kind of like, done. I don't know.
I'm just done with all of us. We're terrible.
Let something in space hit us. Probably deserve it.
We are terrible.
we also have an actual treatment for a potential sequel to the sequel of Short Circuit that was actually done with the writer of Short Circuit,
S.S.
Wilson, on the podcast Remake This Movie Right that you can still find in the feed. If you go check that out.
That's a true story. That was actually very cool. He joined us for an episode and he helped us remake his own movie. That was kind of cool.
That's as cool as you can get, honestly.
It was pretty neat. He also came back and did what? The Howling? He did The Howling with us as well.
And Magnificent Seven.
And Magnificent Seven, yeah. It was pretty fun to do that with a writer. If you never listened, it's an old podcast. We haven't done it in a while. I think there were 60 episodes, but Remake This Movie Right. It was pretty popular when we did it. I'll link the Short Circuit episode in the show notes. So let's go to our whole game, and we're going to keep this legacy sequel thing going. So each person has a job. All right, here's your goal. You pick a movie, preferably over 20 years old, that you would still love to see a sequel to. What is it, and what would you want to see unfold? And I'll give you mine, so you have, if you're still, you know, trying to finalize some details. Here's what I want to see happen, okay? I want it to be, obviously, many, many years later, after this first film. I want a copycat serial killer on the loose, basically duplicating the murders of Seven, kind of doing the whole Seven Deadly Sins thing all over again, that they have to bring in David Mills because they find a connection. David Mills is Brad Pitt's character. And so he has to come back and go back to this very traumatic case. I think Brad Pitt would crush something like this, really show what he's gone through since he lost his wife and his potential family. And he kind of lost his mind because of the last serial killer and how reluctant he's going to be to try to help. It isn't one of those things where he's absolutely, you know, on the case. He doesn't want to do it. And he can even reach out to Morgan Freeman's character for help along the way at some point. We have a new reason and a method and kind of how the murders would be orchestrated. But you would still focus on the Seven Deadly Sins, and they bring David Mills back in. I think that would be a cool legacy sequel.
I hate when Aaron goes first.
Okay, I can cut this and put it at the end, and it's more awesome to end with if you want.
Right, yeah. That's exactly my point, because now I'm like, dang it, mine isn't going to be as good of a follow-up.
How do you know mine's not better?
Because I know you, Troy.
God damn. Son of a bitch. Oh, shots fired.
Did you miss me?
Who let her back here?
I don't know. Who let the girl back? Who wants to go?
Please, Amanda.
Yeah. Ladies first. I love the chivalry. Thank you, Troy. I want to see the Truman Show. I want to see that for our modern day era, because I think if there's something where it's been 25, 30 years or something that's passed, living a quiet life and decide that you are kind of having to get brought back in because of all of the AI, because of influencers, because of deep fakes, like all of that technology, AI technology that we're seeing now. And so instead of it being a show that's revived, it's a VR experience. And he's the subject of it without even realizing that he is. And I think it might just happen to the combination of the complexities of social media and how that's affected with AI and VR, and what at some point it becomes, what is reality to us? And how do we know what's reality and what's not reality?
That's little comedy version of The Matrix meets Ready Player One.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I could see that. And I could see that that would be very interesting. Okay. I would watch that. All right, Troy. You gotta beat Amanda now.
You gotta close it out.
Well, we have this one also on the Remake This Movie Right episode where we continue the story.
I don't think you get money on that.
On how we defend the frontier from Xur and the Codan Armada with a new version of The Last Starfighter.
Ooh.
And on that episode, we basically had a continuation where at the end of The Last Starfighter, Alex obviously goes into space with his girlfriend and his little brother is sitting there behind. And the movie that we posited was basically he had some kind of amnesia, or everybody thinks he had amnesia, right? He saw his brother leave into the spaceship and he's trying to convince the world for many, 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 many years. And so he develops a very similar game to the Last Starfighter game. And three people come to this tournament that they have to participate in. And they win the tournament, which actually brings Alex home because it triggers the protocol or whatever. And they have to fight against a new uprising enemy in the Codan Empire that's coming to avenge their father's death from the first movie. And then this allows Alex to protect, not Alex, but Alex's brother to protect Earth. Because Codan are coming to Earth directly rather than to Ryland originally. And then the three starfighters like blow everything up. Everybody saves the day. And in the end, Alex takes his little brother up into space finally to make him solve his dilemma, to give him his, you know, rightful stance that he was correct this whole time.
Aww.
But, yeah, it was a fun time, but definitely go check out that episode and how we got there. It was a lot of fun. Plus Wayne's trailer is awesome.
It always is. You know, we also did Gremlins, but in Russia, and we called it Kremlins, and that was kind of brilliant. So I'm just saying.
That was
Kremlins.
We had a movie poster made for that one.
Stupid. Yeah. It's stupid.
Did you say stupid? It was brilliant. What are you talking about?
So sometimes I say that it's so stupid when I'm just laughing because it's so fucking ridiculous. So freaking ridiculous. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Fine. Whatever. Now we're moving on. We're going to go into, we've got some upcoming attractions, spoiler-free reviews, and what you've been watching. So we got a few things to talk about here, but let's talk about what's coming out first.
What's coming out first is on August 15th, we have Highest to Lowest, when a Titan music mogul played by Denzel Washington, widely known as having the best ears in the business, is targeted with a ransom plot. He is jammed up in a life-or-death moral dilemma. This one's directed by Spike Lee. And then we also have Americana, which follows local outsiders and outcasts in a small South Dakota town whose lives violently intertwine after a rare artifact falls onto the black market. Sydney Sweeney and Paul Walter Hauser star in this one. That looks like it's going to be a good time. Witchboard is also coming out. A couple's plans to open a New Orleans cafe take a dark turn with discovery of an ancient witchboard. A mystical artifact once used to summon spirits, surprise, surprise, that soon draws them into a race against time to break its deadly curse. Those are all rated R. So sorry, family. Not going to have anything to go see this weekend.
Oh, well.
You could stay home, though, and watch Prime Video on August 20th. Where the map that leads to you, PG-13, follows a young woman played by Klein who meets an enigmatic stranger, Appa, while on a post-grad European vacation with some friends. The attraction will be tested by life and duty and a secret or two as the man changes her life. Wait for it. Forever.
Troy, you're so good at reading those. But it's amazing that you didn't read right above it where it said Troy and Amanda take turns.
Yeah.
I'm just so used to you not being
bitch.
Here.
Oh, dang. That was good.
And it's Madeline Klein and KJ Apa. Just so you know. Yeah. Just so you know. All right. We got two reviews. One is Nobody 2. I'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's start with Red Sonja, which is in theaters for a limited time, and then it'll be on digital at the end of the month.
Wait, is this about the comic character?
It is, Red Sonja.
No way!
Yeah, way.
No way!
So Red Sonja is a 2025 American sword and sorcery film directed by MJ Bassett and enslaved by an evil tyrant who wishes to destroy her people. Barbarian huntress Red Sonja must unite a group of unlikely warriors to face off against Dragon and his deadly bride, Dark Anicia. Is that how they pronounce it in the Anicia. Film, Aaron?
Yeah.
Anicia. Yeah. Matilda Lutz is the star here. So this doesn't seem like your typical flavor for something you'd go see, Aaron. So I know you like comic books. I know this is based on some comic book lore. What do you think of the translation from comic to screen for this particular character and story?
It's better than the terrible Brigitte Nielsen movie from the 80s. I'll tell you that. Much better than that. The reason why I watched it is I like Matilda Lutz. She's Red Sonja in this. And what I like about her, she's a very good actress. If you ever saw a movie called Revenge, I think it's a really intense revenge thriller, obviously. And basically, she's kind of this, in that movie, she's someone who's taken complete advantage of, and she has to come back and get revenge while also trying not to die horribly. And it's a very intense movie, and she has to do a lot of acting with her facial expressions. She doesn't get to do a lot with actual voice with dialogue and whatnot. So, because of that, I'm like, okay, well, I know she can handle this because this is a very much a role where you have to show strength. You have to signal fierceness. And I think as far as the character goes, Matilda Lutz, I think has dinner, right? She is definitely apt to be Red Sonja. I think she goes through kind of a burgeoning of a character as she goes through the movie. In terms of, you know, how faithful it is to the comics, I don't know the comics from Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith that well. I know that, you know, she's a female swashbuckler, and she was known for wearing this bikini made out of chain metal and that sort of thing, which, you know, of course, you know, guys like what they like.
Bisexual, half naked, in armor,
yeah.
Hot looking redhead.
Yeah,
it is literally like a man's porn dream.
Kind of, yeah. It's like bikini armor and scale mail or whatever you want to call it. But it's, I think she does a very good job with what she has. Okay, the story, it's a simple story. There's a lot of fantasy elements to it. I do believe the script is strong enough. There's twists and turns throughout it. I really, really dug the villain in this, the villainous choice in here of Dragon, played by Robert Sheehan. He is very, I was very impressed with him. Like, he probably caught me more off guard than anybody else in the movie. And I like a lot of the other supporting cast, but I liked him because he kind of played a villain a little different. He's this emperor character who is using knowledge to kind of take over the realm, so to speak, to take over the world. And, you know, everybody else is fearful of gods and monsters and whatnot. He's using knowledge. He's using actual machines. He's actually doing learning to take over because he thinks people are stupid and he's taking advantage of their idiocy. And it actually, you know, it kind of makes logical sense when you watch the movie. But I liked the way he plays the character because he plays it very just kind of nonchalant, and he's not being overly ridiculous. He's not going over the top. He's not going under the bottom. He's just kind of playing an even keel until when he does lose it occasionally, but he's always got a smile. and he's kind of laughing things off. And I like that because it just makes for a fun villain. And also, I think the most important aspect of a villain is you got to believe that they believe this is the best course of action. And he makes that evident throughout. She has a relationship with her horse, which I find very fascinating and kind of sweet. That plays very much in the film. The fight scenes are solid, not exceptional, but solid. And that brings me to my one issue with the movie. The special effects suck. So,
oh boy.
If you've seen the trailer, I don't know if I talked about this here, but I definitely talked about it on the Facebook group or page. It's a terrible trailer. If I'm being perfectly honest, the trailer is not good. The movie is better than that trailer. I will tell you, I was not bored. I enjoyed the movie. There are several scenes where they have CGI creatures. There's one where there's a Cyclops. There's several where there's beasts and whatnot. And whenever you have that, it's completely distracting because it's bad CGI. It's not good. It doesn't work. Now, you can see the setup, you can see the execution. I think if they had the budget, this would have looked cool. But unfortunately, you kind of have to let your imagination run with it to really get into it. You can kind of enjoy it a little bit. If you really like B movies, you can get behind that stuff, right? But when you're trying to have this big, audacious sword and sorcery epic, when you have distracting CGI, it does distract you from the movie. Does it not? Everybody with me on this?
100%. Totally. Yeah.
Modok, anyone?
Quick question for you, Aaron.
Sure.
So this character, you know, obviously goes back to the comics into, I think, the 70s or 80s. Mm-hmm. Does it go into like her origin story? How far deep does that go? Because trigger warning, there's it's pretty horrendous how her character kind of gets the powers that she does from this goddess. So I'm just curious, is it focusing on that or is it just like kind of a quick summary? Hey, here's how we got here.
They do go through an origin story. It is not as intense as you just described. So it's rather... Okay. I mean, she definitely has stuff, you know, from her childhood that she has to go through, but I think it's really minor compared to her quest, if you will.
Basically, when she was a kid, she had like her house was raided by some bandits and they attacked and killed her family. And
that part's in there. So don't say any too much more because I don't know if you want to ruin it. But there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's just kind of basic, and then she ends up like getting raped'd.
That part is not in the movie.
Okay. No, so it's interesting that they've kind of, and I think it's in a good way, that they've kind of tamed some of the origin story because it's really dark, but I think it's also like it gives you an understanding of why she became the warrior that she did. Like she was literally crying out, hoping for that revenge, and that's when this goddess basically said, here's some powers for you, girl. Like, go out there and get your business. And so her whole thing was like, because of what she went through, she swore she would never, you know, be with a man unless he could defeat her in battle. Like, her whole goal was to be able to be this protector, this warrior, not just for herself, but for the people that she cares about, but especially for herself, too. And so there's like a lot that goes into it. And also why the sexualization, I think, to some extent exists, because it's like, you know what, I'm going to take, and everybody has their own opinions on this. I'm going to just tell you how I feel from my perspective as a woman. There are two ways typically that when someone has been essayed, I got to use all of the things because I don't even know what gets you pulled from the internet these days.
Me either.
And sometimes when that happens, a lot of individuals are led into kind of a more sexualized lifestyle. But I think the alternative to that and why some women don't mind perpetuating or not perpetuating, but like really showcasing, like, I am a woman, I'm hot, I'm sexy, whatever. But also, I'm not going to let you take away my ability to love my physicality and love who I am as long as I can protect myself. And I think that part of her character is really cool. Like, if you look at it through that lens, right? So I was just kind of curious to see how much of that character was really shaken up on screen or if they really kind of tempered her down.
Tempered her down. Definitely. Okay. What you just described sounds like a much better movie, honestly. And
you're welcome.
I kind of wish I would have got that. But no,
Does it show her having powers as a kid, or does she get the powers later?
No, she gets them later, but it's through battle.
And by kid, she was 17, for the record. So she was like...
No, she was a kid becoming an adult. For this one, like a little kid in this.
Oh.
Initially.
No, when the bad thing started to happen to her, she was a kid.
Yeah, she's a kid, yeah.
Yeah, she's a little kid. And then, you know, as she's going through trying to get revenge, trying to basically save people, then she goes through a lot of hell, and that's where she gets her powers later. And then I will say at one point, her hair's red, and it's actually a cool color of red through most of the movie, and then she gets the Red Sonja red, and it becomes very red, and it looks like Raggedy Ann doll, and it looks terrible. That kind of shift is just like, why did you go, why was that the choice? I mean, thankfully, she's a very attractive girl. She makes it work and da-da-da-da. Woman, sorry. But the hair just looks, yeah.
Like forced? Like we're trying to go real hard because it's red, Sonja?
Yes, like we're going to get so red. It's going to be so red. The reddest red that's ever redded. You know, it's like that.
Did they incorporate any, like, significance around a sword?
Yeah, they have sword stuff. Yeah, they have sword.
But like, no, not like that. is there like a sentimental moment around swords or a sword?
She has a sword she digs. Does that count? Sounds like they're missing some of the plot from the comic book, if I'm being honest, basically.
That's what I'm gathering.
The sword definitely has some very big significance that would really affect your life specifically, Aaron. Yeah, it would be a great for like a, if it was actually a Marvel movie, it would be a great post-credit stinger.
And I know that she's called, what, She-Devil with a Sword? Isn't that what she's kind of called
in the comics? Yeah, Sword of the She-Devil, yeah.
Yeah. So there's definitely references to it. I think this is more of just setting the character up and getting her ready to go. And maybe they were hoping for a series to really go forward with it, but yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely a future thing with the sword that's kind of cool and how it all ties in.
I hope it's like a He-Man thing where she points to the sky and she's like, by the power of Grayskull. That would have been
cool. Don't you love when, like, there's a film that's based on source material and then people are trying to talk around it so that way they don't spoil it, but then the people who do know it are like, oh, yeah, let's secretly talk in our secret little language. So me and Troy are talking about this sword and you're like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I saw the movie and I'm telling you, it's not there. No. if it's there, it was very subtle. It's still an engaging enough movie, but yeah.
Yeah. So there. Which would make sense because nobody can beat her because she's obviously.
I mean, I will say she gets beat quite a few times. And here's one of the things that detracted from the movie, okay? So this is kind of a funny thing, but so very beginning, she finds out that these, and so I'm not really, I promise, I'm not really spoiling anything. She finds some poachers that hurt these animals, and that's where we first meet her really going for it. And she's like, going to go get revenge. And she comes across their camp, and then it's where the emperor's there and everything's there. But there's like 50 people in this camp. And she decides to sneak into where another animal is being held in a crate, right? And she's going to let them free. But first, she has to basically take out the two guards. Keep in mind, on the other side of this crate are 50 freaking people. And she goes up and has a full-on conversation with these guys. And then she ends up in a fight with someone else, da-da-da-da, and then, of course, she's exposed, and then there's a real fight that breaks out. But it's like, what was your plan? Like, what was the plan? I'm going to walk up, sneak up to this one area of the crate where people can't see me, have a conversation with dudes where I'm definitely going to fight them, and then hopefully get out of here alive without anybody seeing that this giant creature sneaks off in the woods with me. I mean, it's a wild scene.
Aaron, have you never rolled a three on deception?
I have never played it, so no. I sure have not.
To me, that sounds like every Assassin's Creed mission.
Sure. Yes. But I was thinking about Assassin's Creed, too. I was like, that's exactly it.
Sneak
in,
get the horse, sneak out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was a terrible plan on her part. But so if $10 full price permission, I give Red Sonja about $5.50. I still enjoyed it, but man, the effects are a little...
Still better than the Green Knight?
Yes, it's much better than the Green Knight. Before we move on to our next Smurfin movie, let's talk about what you can bring home to your house. You can bring home the Smurfs movie on digital now. And in this epic, fun adventure, the Smurfs team up with new friends on a daring rescue mission to save old Papa Smurf from a league of evil wizards. You can buy the film the critics are calling pure comedy magic and get over 35 minutes of Smurftastic extras, including new music from Rihanna, and more. It's available at participating retailers. It's rated PG from Paramount Pictures. And again, Rihanna, What more do you need to know? That's Smurfing awesome. All right. So now let's talk about Nobody 2, or as I like to call it, Dose Nobodies. This is a sequel to Better Call Saul's Bob Odenkirk's action flick, Nobody, which came out several years ago. It was actually, it was in COVID time, so it didn't do great at the box office, but it had one of those word of mouth kind of receptions. So it did so well that it decided to, all right, let's do another one. And this time it's directed by Timo Jajanto. And it's written by Derek Kolstad, who's a famously creator of John Wick as well. And this runs very similarly in terms of what kind of action it is. But this time, suburban dad Hutch Mansell, this former assassin, is still doing assassin work because he has to pay off a debt because he burned a bunch of Russian money in the last movie. Well, so the family is struggling. His son's acting out. His daughter never sees him. His wife, Connie Nielsen, is really kind of sick of him having to go murder people all the time while she's trying to sell houses. And so they need a break. So they go away for a family vacation, and wouldn't you know it, they come across evil drug lords and a corrupt sheriff's department, and Hutch just can't let it go. So this movie is basically an hour and a half, mostly nonstop action flick with Sharon Stone as the villain who actually comes across Lindina. She actually comes across pretty vicious and wicked. I actually think she does a pretty good job. Colin Hanks shows up as one of the corrupt sheriffs. John Ortiz is in here as the sheriff. And, of course, Christopher Lloyd comes back as Hutch's dad. Bob Odenkirk, once again, I mean, yes, they make this work. I will tell you, it's getting harder to buy him as an action hero. I just think he's not as swift as Keanu Reeves. He's just not. But these are fun movies. The first one I really liked a lot. I thought it had a lot of potential. This one kind of follows suit. It's very quick to the point and just keeps moving. The pace is phenomenal. It's only an hour and a half movie. If you like the first one, you're going to like this one. There isn't too much more to say about that, except the action is consistent. The plot is about as sensical as the last one. But at least this one, they're trying to showcase how impulsive Hutch can be. Like, he has a hard time just walking away when he should, even though his wife keeps trying to teach him how to do this. Like, just, you're going to get yourself killed. And the one thing I will say, I think in the first film, here's the difference between the two movies. The first Nobody, I thought the action was extremely well choreographed, which is a great thing, but also well shot. And that's the thing that I think gets lost in a lot of action movies, is it's how you shoot the action, if I can see it. And we have different directors here. And this has a lot more quick cut and stuff that I don't like when I watch an action flick, because it's hard to tell what's happening in the scene. That's the one thing why I love how Chad Stahelski shoots his action in the John Wick movies. Camera's always back, right? Your camera's always pulled back, so you can see all parties involved as they're kicking each other's ass and they're moving around and they're doing their different stunt choreography. And even at times when it can feel like choreography, at least it's shot well and it keeps you in the moment. It's immersive. When you do quick cuts or you do like real close-ups, it's hard to tell what's going on. So you hear the sounds and it sounds like some ass kicking, and you're basically supposed to assume that there's a whole lot of it. So the sequel has a lot of that, and that detracts from how enjoyable the first movie was. Now, the plot still moves. It's still fun. I still really enjoy the family, especially as they get into antics, and Hutch is trying not to get involved, but he keeps, they keep pulling him back in, just like the Godfather. And so he ends up taking on, a small army without a problem, really. I still enjoyed it. I have had a lot of fun with these movies. I will be honest, I don't need a third one. If I'm being perfectly honest, I think this is good where we are. This just isn't I like Bob Odenkirk a lot. I think he's a great actor. He's done a lot of great parts. He's a great comedian too, if you've ever seen his comedy. It's getting harder to buy him in the role. That's all. I think he does fine. Don't get me wrong. He does fine. But as the movie comes to an end, I'm like, I think he should retire from this particular franchise. I'd rather watch John Wick 5. I think Keanu still has the moves, and he can sell it. And Odenkirk, I don't think, sells it as well. But I still enjoyed the movie. I still thought it was a fun enough ride. If $10 for price admission, I give Nobody 2 $6. If you like the first one, you're going to like this one. The action isn't as memorable, and it's not as much of a surprise, because the first time you're seeing Better Call Saul, you know, you're seeing Saul Goodman whoop somebody's ass on a bus. And that was a real big surprise because you've never seen him do anything like that. Now it feels like standard fare. And we've already seen a lot of what they're doing. But there are some cool kills. There's some cool set pieces. And the pace is great. So I give it $6. Freaky or Friday?
Freaky Friday.
Now, you did see this. This is where you have Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan coming back together, which is pretty cool that Jamie Lee Curtis actually used her clout from winning that Oscar to will this into existence, which I
love that.
I love that.
Love that. And God, she's such a queen.
Okay, calm down.
I love 22
years after Tess and Anna endured an identity crisis, Anna now has a daughter and a soon-to-be stepdaughter, and as they navigate the challenges that come with two families merging, Tess and Anna discover that lightning might strike twice, and they end up switching bodies, and now you've got teens that are in mom and grandma, and grandma and mom are in teens, right? So does this one recapture what you loved about the first one?
It really does. So I don't know how much is in the trailer, but I feel like the trailer does show, you know, the family dynamic here. Mm-hmm. And it's cute because you have like this split blended family, which is much more common, right? I mean, I think it's like what, 48% of all marriages end in divorce. So families getting together and trying to bridge that is very common these days. And you have some American and you have some that are from London, and they're trying to kind of get through this potential transition of where are they going to live. And obviously the two girls, the daughters, they're not very interested in changing their entire life. And it's so beautiful to see Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan reclaim the screen together, because it truly felt like no time had passed. The magic was there. I loved Lindsay Lohan in this. I thought she was great. I thought she was really cute. She was really funny. Honestly, the entire cast.
She's always been a very talented actress. She really is.
Yeah. No, 100%. There's even, oh my gosh, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's even a reference to Parent Trap and to Mean Girls, though the Mean Girls is unintentional. The Parent Trap one, it's very intentional. And so I feel like I also got these nice little like Easter eggs around Lindsay Lohan and her kind of coming back to the foray of acting, which was really great. Mm-hmm. But they give you something new, right? We're using the same concept to a degree. They're changing how we get to a body switch, but there's still a body switch. And it's kind of a large scale body switch.
Okay.
Is what I would say.
Is it fun when the people
it's
are in different
so
bodies?
Fun. And okay. It's so fun. And honestly, the characters are super cute because you have Julia Butters, who's playing Harper, which is Lindsay Lohan's daughter. Mm-hmm. And then you have Sophia Hammonds, who is Lily Davies, who plays Manny Jacinto's daughter. And all four of the people that end up switching bodies do such a phenomenal job before and after in making us feel like, okay, this truly is a different person right now. Like, I am looking at this woman, and I guess that's Jamie Lee Curtis in that body. You know what I'm saying? And so sure. You feel so bought in.
That's pretty cool.
So I also will say, you have to like SNL comedy, because they bring a lot of kind of just like ridiculous comedy into the fold, and they have a lot of guest spots that will make you laugh hysterically. But it's not the, I don't know, I think you just have to really have that type of comedic chops for it to enjoy it the right way.
Is Mark Harmon back in this?
Yes.
Ryan?
Yeah, he has a very prominent piece to it, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's pretty into it. Right. Chad Michael Murray, you know, everybody knows he came back, and so that was really exciting to see it. But and they play on it. They play on so much from the first movie and bring it into the second that honestly, yes, you can understand what's going on. You don't need to see the first one, but it's so much better if you have. And I'll say that I went to see this with my best friend. And we're both somewhere in our 30s is all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know the details. You don't ask a woman their age. And then nobody a 12-year-old and 11-year-old, two girls who are like not, they had no idea what Freaky Friday was. They didn't probably didn't even know who Lindsay Lohan was anymore. So we watched Freaky Friday. We watched Freaky Friday. They were like adamant that they don't want to watch this because it's like watching a movie with your with their mom and her friend, sure, sure. their aunt. And so they ended up liking it. They liked the first one. We go to see the second one and I'm just waiting. First of all, I've spent probably $150 because I accidentally purchased concessions twice and went to the wrong theater.
Oh, so wow.
I had to purchase it again on top of tickets. Dude, I could never have a family of four because I can't afford it.
Not with
one
that
movie.
Poor planning. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. So anyway, what about it?
So we get to this movie. They're watching it. I'm thinking that they're just going to hate it. They come out of it. And I'm like, what did you guys think? They're like, yeah, we liked it. And then the my goddaughter, who I thought for sure, because she can just be like, so I don't like that. I'm not going to like that. I'm too grown for that type of thing or whatever. She's like, but the first one was still so much better. And I was like, yeah, I got this girl hooked on Freaky Friday. They also reintegrate. I'm talking almost every character that was in the first movie.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was so, so cool. It was just so a really fan, fun trip on nostalgia.
You're going to
yeah.
keep being a fan.
Yes, 100%.
Okay, so $10 full price permission. What do you give Freaky or Friday?
I give it $6.50.
You sound like you like it a lot more than...
Maybe, yeah, you're right. Maybe it's like a 7. It's probably at least a 7.
Jeez, man.
I love Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan together. They're so fun.
It's cool. I mean, you know that... I'm sure you know, but... She's been instrumental in Lindsay Lohan's like life, cleaning up and everything else. Like she's been somebody that's always kind of looked out for. Like they've been friends throughout since the first movie, which I think is very cool.
I could cry right now. Yeah, I love it. That sounds we love cool. it.
I remember her talking about like that's the one thing she wanted to happen when she when Jamie Lee Curtis started having a resurgence. She wants to do something with Lindsay Lohan, and she's been trying to will this to life for a while. So I'm glad that it finally happened, and it's a huge hit. Troy. You saw The Hunting Wives Club. What are the thoughts here, sir? What do we got going on?
I mean, this is basically...
It's on Netflix.
Netflix,
is Club
yes.
in the title? I thought it was just The Hunting Wives.
Okay, The Hunting Wives. Whatever. Yeah. I don't watch it.
It was like 8 episodes, 1 season. I'm sure it's probably going to come back. Think of it if Hallmark did Dallas instead of Debbie with Way Less Jesus.
Okay.
Way less Jesus is nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found.
No. But there you are, because they are NRA fundraising, quote unquote, Christians.
You're right.
That live in East Texas, right? So
Jesus. Jesus has not blessed this. Let me just tell you that.
Oh my God.
So Brittany Snow plays Sophie O'Neill. She's a newcomer to this East Texas town. And she's basically incorporated into a desperate housewives type neighborhood where all of the women have secrets. Eventually, Brittany Snow's character, Sophie, is a prime suspect of a teenage girl's murder. But this isn't the girl on girl action that you're looking for in this movie, because it's all the other girl and girl action that's happening in this movie.
It's a series.
Series. Yes. It's a titillizing series, to say the least. There's
a titillizing.
Stop.
Aaron, that's the entire show.
It's tacky.
It is very. There's like old woman with an 18-year-old boy. There's Sophie peering through the window, watching that happen, wishing that she was that person. It is sex on steroids for the entire 8 episodes. So if you're into that thing, like this is totally up your alley. It is made specifically for that kind of watch viewing. It is what would be considered classic Skinamax type fodder on Netflix.
Okay. And what do you give that? What's your score of this one?
I mean, I like perused through it on the 2x speed because I was like, I don't really want to watch this because it has no plot.
Slowed down until he got to the sex scenes. Exactly. And it's like, because some of it is like a little steamy. Like, I'm talking, you're watching, like, I'm standing outside a window watching you do your thing with someone else while you're watching me back.
Yeah.
And now, and then I'm going to also think about that later while I take care of my business.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
So it's naughty.
5.5.
Did you watch all 8 episodes?
I watched enough of the 8 episodes to get the gist.
Okay.
He went through the sex scenes.
Yeah, he's he did. Yeah, he did.
Let's. Mm.
All right.
It's got an interesting twist. It's probably like the ladies are probably loving it because it's that woman bonding type of feel. There is a little bit of a story with the murder, but at the end of the day, this isn't about the story. They made this specifically for the experience.
So it's not for me. All right. Well, last one I want to leave you with is Weapons. It's kind of, I mean, Freakier Friday and Weapons are both came out last week, but we didn't do a normal episode last week, but I definitely want to speak to this because it's become like one of the biggest movies of the year.
Surprises. Yeah.
Surprising. It's an original movie. It's from the director and writer of Barbarian, Zach Cregger. It's called Weapons, and the plot, I can't tell you much about it. That's the great part about this. So if you've seen the poster or you've seen a trailer, they do a great job of not showing you anything. They really did a wonderful, I gotta say, Warner Brothers this year, they've had 6 movies back to back. I think it's the first studio in history to ever do this. They've had 6 releases back to back of $40 million or better, right? Because their marketing department is on fire. They are crushing it. Minecraft crushed it. Sinners crushed it. I mean, they just keep popping out hits one after another. Well, Weapons is another one that they're adding to their arsenal. But this one is about, this is the tagline, right? This is what's on the poster. Last night at 2:17 a.m., every child from Mrs. Gandhi's class woke up, got out of bed, went downstairs, opened the front door, walked into the dark, and they never came back. That's the setup. That's actually all kids but one. There's actually one kid that didn't. Now, what the movie is that really it starts from that point, from that setup. And, you know, you've seen it in the trailer, you've seen it in the commercials, whatever, kids running Naruto style into the night, right? And the rest of the movie is figuring out what the frack is going on. It's an extremely well-constructed. It reminds me very much of Tarantino. It's non-linear. You're kind of going from character to character to character. That's how they tell the story. And it unravels as you go from each character's point of view. You get a little bit more piece of the puzzle until it starts kind of coming together and you see where things are going and you see how things are connecting. And because it's non-linear, you might get one character's piece a little later, but it's mostly in order from one point forward. Like basically shortly after these kids have gone missing and you see a lot of the groupthink and you see a lot of the parents overreacting and they're kind of blaming Julia Garner, who is the teacher, Justine Gandhi. And, you know, you see Josh Brolin is one of the parents who his name is Archer. And you kind of start seeing, and she has a friend named Paul, who's a cop, Alden Ehrenreich, who played Han Solo. So you've got these actors who are in there. And that's really all I want to get into in terms of the cast, because I think you should really just let this play out for itself. But what I will tell you is extremely well written, well conceived. I think the concept is better than the execution in some respects, but the finale is wild. You're going to just be giggling with insane because it's so insane. And it really does have a great payoff. I really do like the payoff. Julia Garner is one of my favorite actresses working today. So the fact that she gets a starring role and crushes it, like absolutely crushes it in this movie, is a plus. Josh Brolin, I think, is always very strong. But it's a hard movie to tell people about because all you want to tell them is it's worth seeing in a theater. It's absolutely worth seeing in a theater. I don't think it's a horror movie. It's more a thriller with a lot of mystery elements. There's some comedy. And I think the best movies of this type, the best kind of tense movies has an element of comedy to it. And there's definitely an element of comedy to it. A lot of surprises. There's a couple scares, but they're not anything to where it's actually going to unnerve you. I was never unnerved, but I'm also very numb because I've seen so many horror movies in my life. But I definitely think this is well worth seeing in the theater, especially if you like original work, because it is original. Like, you're not going to see anything like this year. And some of it is great, some of it is what, and a lot of it is fantastic. So Weapons is definitely something I think you should see in a theater. It's up there with some of the best movies we've seen this year. And if $10 full price admission, I give it about $8.
All righty then.
Yeah. I wish I could really just kind of go through some of the aspects of it, but it's pretty cool. And you also, it's a movie you have to sit and actually just let unravel. Stop putting what you want it to be in Troy. This would be hard for you because you're already like thinking how you want it to go 5 minutes into it, but just let it happen. Take it in and just let it play out. I think you'll have a great time. It's pretty cool. All right. That's it for this episode. Unless you guys have anything else you want to talk about. Amanda, you've been gone. Do you want to run through everything you've watched in the last 6 months since you haven't been here? Or?
No honorable mentions. The rule still is, as far as Amanda, the rule is still in play.
Exactly.
No, I'm happy to be back. I'm happy to laugh with you guys again. And hopefully we get Johnny back someday too, so I have more people to give shit to.
Amen. But then we're already like an hour and a half. I mean, how long do you want this damn thing to be?
You know, you're right. You're right. So I guess John just doesn't come back or...
No, I think what we do is we put you both in an allotment of how long you can talk. That's what we do.
And good luck.
Troy and I get the majority.
Really?
We've been
because
here.
Because Troy can you keep guys himself have been gone. Concise.
Troy, ever ready, ever present. You know what I'm saying?
He is.
Steady. Steady.
Consistent, reliable, has no real... instability in his life. Good for him.
She's been gone too long. She has no idea.
She has no idea.
Are you mentally unstable?
He's got so many issues. We don't have time for that.
Borderline psychosis.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being back, Amanda. Thanks, Troy, for always being here. And that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, the next time you head to a theater to see any of these really great options that we've mentioned, buy popcorn.
Buy popcorn.
Or you say it then. Fine.
I was doing it after you. I was trying to give like an echo.
Whatever. Make it about you.
You have to say thank you for getting nominated again.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the nomination, people. Dude. I forgot about that.
Dude.
Hey, you don't get the... You haven't even been here. I don't even... Does it count?
So?
I've only put it in four places in the format and in the chat to like, dude, fucking look.
I was listening. I was listening intently to what you guys were talking about. That's what you're supposed to do on a podcast. Yes, we are finalists again for the podcast awards. And TV and film. Thank you guys so much because you can only get nominated if you guys vote for us. So I do absolutely appreciate it.
One time. We won one time. It's fine.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe we'll win again. We shall maybe. See. But thank you for everybody who voted for us. We really do appreciate it. And that's going to do it. Now you can go see a movie. Go do whatever you want. Sit on your couch. I don't care. Have a great time. Have a great week. We'll be back next week with our Summer Entertainment Awards.